You're listening to the All Systems Go podcast, the show that teaches you everything you need to know to put your business on autopilot. Learn how to deploy automated marketing and sales systems in your business the right way with your host, the professor of automation himself and founder of Automation Bridge, Chris Davis.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the All Systems Go podcast, where we invite startup founders and digital marketers to discuss strategies and software used to build automated marketing and sales systems that scale. I'm your host, Chris L. Davis, the founder of Automation Bridge. And today we get to talk about digital marketing and direct mailing. Some of you may be confused even with that title and say, well, how does that work? The whole purpose of digital marketing is to no longer send snail mail or that old school traditional way of marketing. That's what Dave is here to dispel. And Dave thinks the best kept secret in marketing is hiding where you least expect it. And you got it, your mailbox. He's got over 20 years experience and has generated hundreds of millions of dollars in ad revenue powered by viral sensations like the Dollar Shave Club. He's also helped startups for Jessica Simpson. He's helped launch startups. There you go. For celebrities like Jessica Simpson, Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen, and Kate Bosworth. Now, Dave is the founder of Postie, and he's out to reinvent direct mail marketing and digital. I should say direct mail marketing and digital in the digital world. It's all coming out, Dave. We'll get it. So welcome to the show, Dave. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. And I thought you did great there on the intro.
Yeah, it's well, you know, it's more of like a tongue twister in my head. Direct digital. It's like, well, digital is direct. So but I'm so glad to have you on. Because I love when we can have founders or and just talk strategy where you take traditional efforts and marry them with these new upcoming cutting edge technologies. Because I find that a lot of times these new age marketers, Dave, like to throw the baby out with the bathwater. They're like, oh, everything's online. Forget all of that old school stuff. And it's like, no, wait. That old school stuff still works. You just have to figure out that balance. So before we jump into it, give our audience a little bit about your background and how you, your path to where you are right now.
Sure. And there's a lot to unpack in what you just said. I'm excited to dive into with you. But so my background, about 20, maybe 22 years at this point in consumer internet businesses. And had the opportunity to kind of bounce back and forth throughout my career between, you know, building marketing technology platforms. Almost always up until Postie, were solely focused on kind of the emergence of the power of digital. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, on the other hand, also worked on launching direct-to-consumer brands that, you know, kind of took their advantage from understanding, you know, quantitative, data-driven, you know, digital marketing, and you know, the principles in many ways are very similar between the two. It's how do you understand your audiences? How do you leverage software, technology, measurement in order to make you know, faster, better, more robust decisions to be competitive and you know, with in oftentimes spaces that there are a lot of big incumbents. And And I think what you said was spot on, which is it's not an all or nothing thing, right? You don't have to. I think there was a time when we all thought about, you know, if we were a digital brand, you know, everything we did had to be on the internet. Everything we had to do, you know, every engagement tactic, every way we spoke to our consumers or acquired consumers or retained consumers, we thought, you know, had to be in this box of digital. And you know, I think now we're in a world where, you know, it isn't, you know, digital versus traditional versus wholesale. It's you know, how do you bring your product to market and to life and leverage everything that could help you do so efficiently.
Yeah. And it's a delicate balance because it's one of those things where, you have, you know, you can run into people who are long-winded and they said a whole lot of words, but really meant nothing. And you walk away like, man, that was an hour. What did we just talk about? Right. And then you have somebody that maybe said a sentence or two and you walk away like, oh my gosh, that was mind blowing. The intelligence, you know, of that individual. And to get to that level of mastery, we'll say, it requires experience. So what I find is that a lot of marketers getting started do a whole lot. They're doing a whole lot of stuff, hoping that it does something, where you have the more savvy marketer that after a while, after years, you start to identify, okay, it's really only these levers that we need. We only really need these activities to produce results, and these channels will help us do that.
Look, I mean, that's, I think, across the board in life in general. I use that this one phrase with my teams, you know, day in, day out, which is I truly believe in. And there are no shortcuts. You got to put in the work, right? Yeah. And yeah. Look, I've been fortunate to work with some pretty darn brilliant entrepreneurs and executors and executives throughout a long career. And there are definitely people that are brighter than others or who are savvier than others who get there quicker. But even they, you know, they had to put in the work. Maybe they started younger, or they learned a little faster, but you know, you have, you know, your hypothesis and you have to put that into the world and you have to be aware of, you know, evaluating what works and doesn't work. That's in life. And that's certainly in marketing. And that's certainly, you know, one of the advantages that digital has kind of taught the world, that you really can leverage the scientific method of coming up with a creative series of hypotheses, you know, break them into a number of, you know, micro and macro tests. You know, closed loop, measurement allows you to pull away insights and kind of, just, you know, keep leaning in.
Yeah. So in that respect, you know, we've got 20 years on at least 20. You're being modest there, 'cause you told me you started marketing, you know, teenager. So we'll just say you've got a lifetime of marketing, results. You've seen a lot. So at some point in your career, you decided that there's an opportunity to take what you've learned there, you know, and blend it with this traditional medium or this traditional channel. What was it that led you to go the software route? Was this your first go around at software? Did you try it in the past before with failure? Do you have a lot of friends that have SaaS companies? Like, what was that process like for you?
Oh, well, I mean, if you're talking about day one, out of college or shortly thereafter, it was absolutely dumb luck. It was either 1999 or 2000, somewhere right around there. And I graduated college with a degree in psychology and an emphasis in humanities and classic literature. I had no applicable skill set for, you know, the business world. And I had a friend who worked at an internet startup in Chicago and, told me that they were hiring, you know, by the basketful on a weekly basis, and recommended that I just, you know, take whatever job I could get and get exposure to the business world in this new kind of transformative world. And that was the best decision I ever made. It was not calculated at all. It was, I needed a job. I was recognizing that I wasn't going to be heading down my original, path that I thought I would coming out of college, and just found myself in a fast growth startup in the beginning of kind of the digital ad revolution, and got exposed to this amazing world of possibility.
Wow. I had a similar experience, but much later. I mean, by the time you were getting your experience with your first startup, I was clocking in from my first corporate job, you know, didn't even know the space existed. Only knew the way to make more money was to work more hours, you know, go overtime, get paid time and a half. And if you weren't going to do something, technology sure wasn't going to do it for you. You had to hire people. Like, that was, and this is me, I graduated in 2005 from college. So it's not like I didn't graduate when there were computers and the internet and all of that. I just didn't know this stuff existed. So back in 2000, 2001-ish, the startup space was like in its infancy. You know, like I, because I remember in college, Dave, you could still buy software that you put in your computer. They were still selling computers with disk drives, you know. Yeah. So, yeah. Wow. So you really got a jump start well, in space.
Yeah. And it's interesting that you bring up, right, that corporate path versus the startup path. They've converged a little bit, you know, in a world where, you know, some of the biggest companies in the world are started out as startups 10 years ago. But back, you know, the original company that I worked for, I ended up in a sales role a couple of years in, which was phenomenal for me because it allowed me the freedom to go and talk with the widest range of brands, of advertisers. And those brands ranged from, you know, tiny little startups where I was selling into and getting to know the entrepreneurs and the founders themselves, all the way up to the biggest, you know, Fortune, you know, 100, you know, enterprise brands. And what I learned really quickly at that time was, I would walk into a big, you know, lobby, a big building, take an elevator up, get my badge, like all that, you know, fancy schmancy stuff at a corporate, you know, prospect or client. And I would go into probably pretty mediocre, you know, uninspiring office space. And I would, you know, walk into a room and engage with someone. And they were, you know, a mid-level marketer that had 14 levels of management above them. And things moved really slow. And we'd engage in some conversations. And those, you know, that's, I'm not saying that that's, you know, the wrong way for those businesses to behave, but that was a very specific way for a business to behave. And I would come back, you know, 6 months later and pitch a different person in that exact same role and answer the same questions again. And it'd be like starting all over in that same office. And yeah. 6 months later, the same conversation again. During that same period, I'd walk into a startup in, you know, in someone's, you know, garage or terrible office space and be talking with these like incredibly creative, dynamic thinkers. And I'd come back to their offices 6 months later, only it'd be across the street in an office space four times the size, and they would be doing things and there'd be a ton of energy. They'd be asking really interesting questions and they would have learned something from that 6 months of engagement. I'd come back 6 months later and there'd be a bunch of Ferraris parked in front of a new office building and they'd have fancy signage. And that was like the moment I was like, okay, like something's going on here in the startup world that is, you know, different, and it's this world of possibility, and it's not all about, you know, going through, you know, like sleepwalking through this 30-year career of one step in front of the other, or one foot in front of the other. It's really about, you know, what you can accomplish, and that was like the bite of the apple that I needed to like cut, you know, wake up, and for me, like that was the beginning of the end, or the end of the beginning, or whatever it is. Like I was. Yeah. I needed to learn how to become an entrepreneur. I needed to play in that world. And it's been, you know, kind of that over the last 20 years now for me.
Yeah. And I'll say this, Dave, I tell people all the time, just because it's my story, if you want to learn marketing, business, just new age technology, how businesses scale quickly, there's no other space like the startup space. You will grow at a multiple of what you would in a regular corporate, regular, no knock against all of that. The corporate world's fastest is still slow for a startup. I mean, things change so rapidly. So you got to have the personality, you know, to like that stuff. And there are some startups that move slow, but for the most part, you really get a crash course in business growth, scale, and many facets of business working with a startup.
100%. It's also a space where, at least, you know, from my experience, you know, if you have capability, that's rewarded greater than tenure or seniority. And so it motivates the right type of people to speak up and to learn as fast as they can and to feel comfortable contributing. And that's a world I want to, you know, work in. That's a world I want to live in.
Yeah. Yeah. So Dave, you've got this success advertising and marketing. You've been on both sides. So you've seen after the capturing the lead and then after the lead is captured, you know, you've seen both. And along your experience, you kept seeing a theme where, oh man, like this channel is, is highly underutilized. There's so much opportunity. Where was that moment for you? Because it's so easy for a digital marketer to get just engulfed with online. How was it? Was direct mail always a component? Was it something that you stumbled upon? Where was that awareness for you? When did it take place?
So we backed into it a little bit. So certainly we had a different, companies in the different stages of those companies in the past had leveraged direct mail. It had been a long while. And the way that we kind of stumbled into, taking a different, look at the direct mail channel was really driven by the pain that, quite frankly, Facebook was throwing our way. Mm-hmm. And I know your listeners are marketers. I know your listeners are entrepreneurs. Like, they've all felt that pain really, it's the double-edged sword of a platform like Facebook, right? It's yeah. as big as any ads platform or media platform's ever become. It's as sophisticated in its tooling capabilities. It's provided marketers with a lot of goods, made us look really smart, enabling us with tools to do complicated things without having to scale big teams at our own companies for many years. But history repeats itself, and Facebook and all social channels, but Facebook in particular is notorious for figuring out how to do things that return shareholder value to Facebook shareholders, not focused on how do we do the right thing for advertisers or how do we do the right thing for consumers, quite frankly. And so, those of us who've been around for, 10, 12 years, we remember how exciting it was when they gave us the tools to buy, followers on our fan pages. And we, as brands, really built that engagement community for them. And then all of a sudden one day they're like, hey, by the way, all those fans that, you engaged and help us build this, ecosystem with, and that you paid to, engage with. Now if you want to post some content and you want them to see it, now you have to pay to boost it or to promote it.
Yeah.
And that was a really crummy feeling. You realize that's what power is, and B, that's not so great for my business or my brand. And look, we all fought through that, and then we learned how to optimize Facebook ads, and for a while their targeting was terrible, but they were the biggest show in town, and then their targeting got actually good, and then their marketplaces became really oversaturated, and ad rates went up, and we certainly can read the earnings report and see what that does to Facebook. And if we're shareholders, we're happy about that. But if we're advertisers that are looking at, 50, 60, 70% of our growth tied to that one platform, that's a pretty precarious position to be in. So that's what drove us to direct mail. It was a little bit of a curve to get there, which was, machine learning works, big data works, optimizing, media campaigns work, insights work, like all these great things that digital and certainly Facebook, brought to us, work. But we need to find other legs to our stool, right? We got to diversify, where we're relying on, customer acquisition and retention, CRM and growth and all that. And so, first, we spent a bunch of time exploring other emerging digital channels, but this was 6 years ago, and there wasn't really anything in digital that could rival the scale that Facebook and Instagram provided. So we ended up looking in offline again, and because we're quantitative, because the expectation of your typical marketer is very robust targeting, building lookalike models, CRM segmentation, frequency testing, and then direct measurement, all those things, direct mail was a channel that showed some glimmer of hope. I mean, all those principles that are applied to digital were being done by direct mail marketers, in the 80s and the 90s. Yeah. It just was a different level of dynamicness than digital, emerged into or evolved into. And so for us, we love the idea that direct mail was incredibly scalable. It reaches more people than Facebook, more people than Google. Because if you have an address in the United States, you are reachable through mail. There's really strong predictive data available that you can use for, you know, in theory, you know, the same level of targeting you can on digital. And because most brands have worked hard to figure out how to, you know, capture, you know, kind of identity-based information on their consumers, on their customers, the, you know, measurement is possible. And so we love those three things. And when we set out to actually execute, you know, complicated direct mail strategies, we realized nothing had changed in the last 40 years. Like,
wow.
And so for us, it was this matter of like, well, that's crazy, right? Like if there's this big channel, it can absolutely diversify media away from these like walled garden, powerful giants. It can give us, put more control back in our own hands. The targeting's there, the measurement's there, the reach is there. Then maybe, you know, technology, software, you know, platforms can actually, you know, close the gap between, you know, the possibility and kind of where it is executionally now. And so that's been, you know, that's how we got there. It was just out of need in some case, desperation.
Yeah. And remaining scrappy. I know direct mail confuses a lot of people. Some people are like, oh, that's for real estate agents, or, oh, that works only for your local business. You know, you can't run direct mail if it's outside of the confinements of your state or even sometimes your city. And I know you've ran really robust campaigns to the most simple. I don't want to assume any intelligence for our listeners, and I want to make sure that they understand the power of this channel and potentially of your software as well. Is starting from scratch, what is the most basic but effective direct mailing strategy that marketers should be aware of right now?
Well, I think it's the idea of three different kind of buckets of strategies.
Okay.
And that I think is maybe the biggest eye-opening moment when we engage, you know, our sales team engages with prospect customers. Direct mail is one of those rare channels that can be used across your full funnel. So, you know, the holy grail for most marketers is acquisition. How do we grow? How do we hit our, you know, our quarterly and annual numbers? How do we find new customers? And prospecting, you know, customer acquisition is incredibly powerful. Very similar strategies to what you can run in digital, programmatic, social, things like leveraging your first party CRM segments to train lookalike models so that you can be razor focused and much more rapid in your optimization. You know, you can be very specific in your segmentation of, you know, most of us brands have, you know, multiple different segments of consumers, and we should, you know, be able to speak uniquely to each of those segments. You know, the creative testing, like that's all possible. So step one is top of funnel acquisition. It's used day in, day out as a huge growth driver. $50 billion a year is spent in direct mail here in the US. But then big, right? But then you move down the funnel and then you think about, hey, I have all this, you know, first party data. I spend all this time, energy, and budget driving engagement with my mobile apps, my lead funnels, my brand websites, my microsites. And that first party digital data can be used to build, you know, programmatic campaigns. And that's a pretty kind of new way of thinking about direct mail. So you have that mid funnel. And then then you go deeper in the funnel and you think about your existing leads or your existing customers and things like, you know, email and SMS being, you know, really efficient ways to engage with those individuals, but, you know, harder and harder to grab attention from those channels, and open rates and response rates, you know, declining. And direct mail is one of those channels that can be used for all those same strategies. Any of your first party CRM data can be turned into, you know, addressable audiences that you can use for, again, for lead conversion or, lapsed customer re-engagement or increasing AOV or tightening up the frequency between purchases. You know, that's the full funnel of marketing. And to me, that's the power of direct mail. And that's kind of the, maybe the component of it that's not thought of by the same marketers that are looking at, you know, email and social and programmatic and search.
Yeah. And the, I guess you know, to summarize it, it is don't limit direct mail to just acquisition. Like sure. Leverage it throughout the entire funnel, the entire customer journey. There's opportunities to couple it. One of the questions I had, just kind of while you were thinking that, while you were talking, now when you're talking, I'm putting myself in the context of it now. And, you know, I'm thinking of what the media looks like, what's on it, how people engage with it, color use and all of that. But maybe one of the more basic questions that our listeners are having that I have right now is, when do you grab the address? Is that something that's, you know, right up front? Hey, you know, give me your information. Are you getting it later? Are you getting it some other means? When do you get the address?
And are you talking about specifically for like a lead conversion campaign? Mm-hmm.
Or even for existing leads, you know?
Well, sure. If you have leads that you don't have address on, well, there are a couple things to note. So certainly, mm-hmm. Anytime, like, look, I mean, the more you know about your customer, the more likely you are to be able to build a relationship, understand who that person is, understand their needs, why they're responding or not responding to your product, to your service, or the way you're talking about your service. So, you know, within reason, you know, the more, you know, data and knowledge you can capture on those, you know, prospects or customers, you know, sooner, the better. With that being said, there are return on ad spend, you know, principles that you also have to weigh as well. And so if you have kind of primary and secondary goals from your media spend, you have to think through how to prioritize those. And you know, there are definitely businesses that are driven more by, you know, each incremental transaction. And so the goal is get out of the way, don't do anything that, you know, interferes with the potential transaction. But then there are other businesses that are building more towards kind of a long-term value or lifetime value view on their customers. And in those cases, it might be okay to sacrifice some portion of immediate conversions and revenue generating action for a broader set of you know, more deeply engaged, you know, prospects that you can work on converting or monetizing or engaging over time. So that's a tough question to answer across the board. The good news though with Postie is that, you know, we have a data management platform. That data mm-hmm. management platform provides access to data on about 275 million Americans, pretty much anybody that, you know, falls within in any brand's addressable market. And that includes, you know, clean malleable address level data and all sorts of feature rich data that can be used to model. The DMP also allows to do some identity work so that if you don't have an address on a customer or a lead, but you have an email address or some identifying feature, there are ways that been done in digital for a very long time that you can resolve that to a malleable audience and not have to go out and worry about capturing that physical address yourself.
Yeah. So which leads to the importance in the whole, right, that you saw in the marketplace when it came to leveraging direct mail. I'll share with you a story. This startup's name shall remain nameless. And it was one of their VPs, their VPs of marketing. I cannot remember. I think we did some reverse engineering and grabbed email addresses from one of our competitors. I think it was. Okay. So from those email addresses, again, there was another tool that grabbed their physical addresses. Right. So we've got these email addresses and then we grab these the physical addresses because we wanted to run a mail campaign. You end up running this mail campaign and clearly you could tell it was the first time that they'd ever done anything like it. So me, as on the technical side of things, I'm just making sure, hey, look, we can put the name of the person in the URL and it'll probably increase the chances that they'll actually go to whatever is on, take action, essentially. Right. Well, Dave, it never saw the light of day because what we found is that there's still some intelligence required when you go scraping your competitors' emails of what you think were their users. Because what we ended up finding is that they were mixed like 50-50 employees of that company and their users. So their employees started to get mail about, hey, leave this company and start using our software and they work for the company that we're saying leave. So hence the data was, oh, it was terrible. It was a terrible performance. But what it did teach me was everything that's involved with direct mailing in terms of when someone actually receives it, what, and they're ready to take action, what needs to be right in front of them. So if someone were to come up to you and say, hey, I want to send a mailer, I just need to know what to put on it, what would you say are the bare minimums that your mail should your mailer should consist of?
Yeah. So that conversation our team has day in, day out with you to post the, you know, advertisers or even prospects. And it's a really fun question because it gives us the opportunity to like kind of, you know, relax, to provide some, you know, zen to the person on the other end of the conversation, because there's nothing different about direct mail or the way you think about direct mail than email or a landing page or a brand site or a billboard. And I didn't always think like that. So the reality, you know, you mentioned the Dollar Shave Club experience, and that was an eye-opening experience for me, because prior to Dollar Shave Club, which, I mean, it's crazy to think about, but now it was started probably 12 years ago, 13 years ago. I was very fixated, like many quantitative or performance marketers, and thing in the kind of tactics and the micro and things like, you know, green color CTAs on beauty, you know, brand websites convert, you know, 15% higher than blue buttons. And, you know, you have to have a few, you know, fewer than 20 words in a headline, or, yeah, this is what you put above the fold or below the fold on, you know, on an image or whatnot. And it's not that those things don't work, and can't, you know, be additive, but they're incremental. What the Dollar Shave Club experience taught me is that in a world of social media, of broadband, of the ability to tell a much longer message, engage consumers longer, more consistently, than a crazy moving flash, you know, banner ad where you feel like shoot the duck going across the, you know, 300 banner, you know, you have there's way more benefit from investing in a great project, great service, a story that, and kind of some storytelling that reinforces why that product's great, serves a need, you know, solves a problem. And when you look at like Dollar Shave Club, like that bit brand, you know, the timing was impeccable. You know, Mike Dubin, the founder of that business, happened to be an incredible, you know, creative, you know, thinker and entertainer, and was able to leverage a viral video and then multiple viral videos in order to tell the disruptive story about why you're overpaying for razors. And there's this, you know, 10,000 pound grill that owns 80% of the market, you know, basically price fixing and whatnot. And what that did is like that got me to realize like, hey, like all these tactics are great, but like, if you leverage the foundational components of marketing in a really meaningful way against, you know, a really quality brand story that's authentic, then that's way more powerful. And that and so that translates to direct mail. When we engage with a client, like it's not about they want to know like all the tips and tricks, and they're like freaked out that they don't know how to like design for direct mail, and we just like, we're like, hey, let's open up your Instagram feed, and then we'll like jump on their, you know, their Instagram feed, and we'll look at like, hey, what Instagram posts got the most engagement, and you know, pick the three or four, you know, images, and we're like, okay, like what is it about these images that are similar that we can learn from? Oh, they're all lifestyle imagery. Oh, they're all talking about a very specific use case. Well, great, like let's translate that into a piece of direct mail. It's not like worry about what, you know, people 30 years ago used to like design for direct mail. Like, let's engage your consumers that we're going to be incredibly targeted on, very similarly to how to how you're reaching them on Instagram and Facebook and email and billboards and your TV ads. Like, it that's what works, and that's fun, and that's actually like very disarming, I think, for someone that's new to direct mail.
Oh my god, extremely disarming. You know what you did to me right there, Dave? You made me think of my mailbox like a social channel.
Yeah.
right? Yeah. Like, what picture would I upload to that channel? It immediately removes the weight of, oh, I've got to get it printed. What should I put? Do I need some stock photo? It's like, well, what would you put on Instagram? What would you upload right now for your brand to get people to say, hey, that's really cool? Wow.
I should stop talking and let your audience kind of let that sink in, because it's really, really important. That's not just true direct mail. It's any channel. You know, we talked about a long history. I remember some of the brands that we were launching that, you know, were early in their career, and every dollar spent on, you know, programmatic or social was really, you know, meaningful and had to pay off. And we would deliberately go out and do photo shoots and design, you know, dozens and dozens of different social feed posts that we were going to get organic distribution. We'd run those first. We'd look at see which post, drove more viral engagement. And then that we would use in our our paid ad campaigns. Like that's just, you know, thoughtful, smart, you know, marketing across the board. Email, right? Email doesn't cost any more than the monthly service license that you have. Like, use email as a way to test messages, offers, images, product versus lifestyle photography, layouts, etc. Like, don't just go off and like redesign your entire website on a whim. Yeah. Like, leverage, kind of your more inexpensive media. Let the data kind of help guide you. And you will be more efficient with your paid media.
Yeah, yeah. And one of the things about your software, your platform, is that it integrates with your CRM directly, and it allows you to more easily leverage direct mail as a channel. Because I tell people often, you know, people aren't opening my emails. What should I do? Send them more emails? And it's like, you know, that's actually, it doesn't make sense, because you can't use the same channel someone disengaged on to re-engage them. If they disengaged in email, your chances of them re-engaging via email are a lot lower than if you used another channel wisely, right?
So I love that. We see time and time again with even some of the biggest brands in the world, the low-hanging fruit and some of the highest converting campaigns are those that take their unsub email lists and introduce those individuals to direct mail. Because it doesn't necessarily mean that they don't want to engage with your brand. It just may mean that they don't want their email inbox flagged up, or you've been too aggressive with them, or that's just not their primary choice of engagement, but they still are interested in shopping, and you need to kind of remind them. The other thing that you brought up with integrating with your CRM, or really anywhere you keep data, any database where you have consumer or prospect data, Postie and therefore direct mail just integrates directly there. And I don't think I've ever really kind of made this connection so succinctly, but we just talked about how you can leverage, you know, the efficiency of things like, you know, your social feeds to make good, you know, leading, you know, indicated decisions on how to invest in design and creative for your paid media and direct mail. Yeah. The same thing is exactly how, you know, we all should think about leveraging first party data. You have this like liquid gold, right? You have this consumer data, this customer database. These are individuals that have already showed you that they're interested in your product and services, find value. Yes. There are platforms like DSPs and Posties, you know, our DMP, where we have, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of different attributes and features on those individuals. And you can, you know, connect, you know, your CRM direct with your Postie account, and you can see, you know, all that data overlaid on your CRM and your CRM segments to get a sense that for who these people are, so that instead of, you know, the experience of, hey, what demographic or behavior should I start, you know, targeting in my direct mail campaign, and you're trying to guess at who you think your customers are. Mm-hmm. If you're a brand that has, you know, thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of customers in your database, like, unlock that existing knowledge and insights, and then you could be off in the direct mail channel, or certainly other programmatic channels, with a tremendous amount of competitive advantage, because now you're going out targeting people that look just like your best performing customers. You know, now you have like a head start in creative, you have a head start on targeting, and you know, you might not be perfect out of the gate, but you're going to save a lot of expense and headache optimizing than you would have without technology. And to me, that's like the power of technology with marketing.
Yeah, the ability to track is everything, right? The fact that you can tie that engagement in, and don't worry, everybody, it is possible for you to send something in the mail and actually have that tracked in your CRM. That's a whole nother topic or a whole nother day. Don't want to overwhelm you all. But the idea that has changed is that that type of data is now accessible by way of digital marketing and technological advancements. Whereas in the previous days, I mean, you had a phone number, you know, maybe a vanity number that people would call, and it's like, okay, they got our mailer because they called this number. So making the tracking much more accessible is huge. And it just makes me think of this. If I were to simplify all of this, we're really talking about using more than one channel to reach your audience. And Dave, honestly, people are running to advertising. They're scratching their head and rolling in all of these programs, buying software. They may be a direct mailer away from success.
Sure.
And that's just the honest truth. It's a channel that they're not even aware of that, you know, they can use. And I was just thinking while you were talking this, if I had somebody's phone number and I kept calling them and they never picked up, I would not keep calling them. At some point, I'll send them a text. And there's a good chance, just by same destination, but just changing my method of communication, I may get a response, maybe an email. And I just don't think we translate that enough, Dave, into marketing. We get so one-dimensional and think that the channel has to do everything and get so down when it's not working. It's like, no, you've got other options. There's other ways to reach your audience.
For sure. I mean, like, look, think about it in our daily lives, right? Like, you know, maybe you're, you know, I know I don't have a whole lot of spare time in my day. So like if I'm at the grocery store and I'm desperately trying to like pick up a few things and I realize like there's an ingredient that I forgot about. And so maybe I'm going to call my wife at home and ask her to go like, look at the list that I forgot to, you know, bring to the store and she doesn't answer. I'm probably, you know, not going to give up. I might think, oh, I'll set, like you said, I'll send a text because maybe she's in the middle of something, right? You know, she's on her Peloton or, you know, on the other line and just figures it's not that important, but then she can see the text and she can respond. And so, it may not be, you know, sometimes targeting is the issue and you're reaching the wrong people or the wrong segments within your, you know, CRM. Right. But other times it could just be that you're reaching them at the wrong time with the wrong message or the wrong, you know, media channel. And look, I don't think there's a single big business, lasting business out there that built their entire growth strategy on one channel. But there are lots of them. I'm guilty of it up until, you know, a handful of years ago that did get way over indexed in channels that provided a ton of value, but also a lot of risk. And so we have to, you know, take the good and the savvy that we've learned through some of these amazing channels and figure out other ways to apply them if we want to be in control of our business's future.
Yeah. Now closing out, last question for you. When should a business start to think of investing in direct mail? Should they first build their list so they have CRM data? Should they go to, you know, their local, I don't know where you buy addresses nowadays, but you know, like what type of business is best positioned to start generating more immediate results and revenue with direct mail?
Well, good news is that we've seen, you know, after sending hundreds of millions of pieces of mail, tens of thousands of campaigns, thousands of advertisers, and measure all of them, you know, we've seen that direct mail can be a really effective channel for the widest range of verticals, brands, maturity levels, et cetera. There are categories, you know, kind of business segments that are probably a little easier to get it right. Direct mail does have cost associated with it. and you need to be a business that has the budget to invest in a new channel. If you're a business where this is your last, dollar and you're throwing it out there on a wing and a prayer, I wouldn't do that. That's not the right reason. Or if you're very early in your path, you don't have any direct mail experience, and you aren't definitively playing in a category where direct mail historically has just been bread and butter for you, I would say better for you to invest in some of the lighter channels like social, where you can get some learnings on messaging, audience segmentation, just prove that your funnels are working, you have the right pricing, all the basics are there. And then as you start gaining some traction in those channels that are a little bit less expensive to initially test in, and it's time to start getting a bit more serious and you have the confidence that the core is there and you have some budget that you can use to lead into the channel for a few months, that's the right time. Like, you don't want to start any channel, direct mail included, if you're going to wake up every day for a few, nervous as a cat. You need to be excited about actually wanting to put some budget to work, and recognizing that there has to be a little bit of risk and investment initially in order to get to a place where it's optimized and ready to scale.
Great. And I would imagine if someone were to sign up with Postie, you all probably have templates. You probably have all kind of resources that help somebody kind of piece it together when they are ready to make that long-term commitment, or they just have a realistic and accurate, approach going in.
Yeah, 100%. So, look, it's a robust channel. There are a lot of, complicated strategies that you can build towards, but it's also, it's a matter of a dozen clicks to get kind of your initial campaigns up and running. It really shouldn't be intimidating.
Got it. Great. Well, Dave, we've got listeners. Maybe this is the podcast they were waiting on. Finally, direct mail. Where can they go to find out more about either yourself or your software?
Our website is I think does a pretty robust job of sharing a wide breadth of information on the channel and how you should think about it and how Postie can potentially help. And then we have a very clear, our own lead form if you would like to engage directly with us and actually run through a demo or talk to a consultative salesperson. I can certainly, LinkedIn is kind of my go-to communication anybody that wants to connect with me is welcome to find me on LinkedIn and I'll do my best to respond.
Great. Well, Dave, thank you so much for coming on, talking about some digital marketing strategies, some advertising strategies, new channels. I really hope this exposes people and expands their mind and their strategic thinking beyond just social and email, because we really need to be playing more of an omni-channel game and taking an omni-channel approach in today's marketing, not because we want to selfishly grow our own business, but it's a service. Sometimes when I'm going to the mail, it's refreshing to see something that I'll actually take action on instead of all of this garbage that I just have to rip up and throw away. So anything done with high value will be received well from your audience. So take the time, learn your audience. I think that's the biggest theme in everything that you were saying. I was thinking like, yep, this is why you need to learn. This is why you need to be paying attention to what your audience is doing, what they're saying, so that you know when you do meet them on a channel like direct mail, you know how to meet them in a way that they'll respond and be appreciative of your strategy and research. So Dave, again, thanks, man. Thanks so much for coming on to the podcast, man.
Yeah, look, I enjoyed it. This is a really good conversation and you obviously know your stuff. And I assume your listeners are of a caliber where hopefully I was able to add some value to their thought process and jobs.
Yeah, I have no doubt in my mind. They're thanking us right now for this podcast. So again, greatly appreciated, Dave. I'll see you online.
Awesome. Thank you.
thank you for tuning in to this episode of the All Systems Go podcast. If you enjoyed it, make sure that you're subscribed. At the time of recording, the All Systems Go podcast is free to subscribe to, and it can be found in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes are released every Thursday, so make sure you're subscribed so that you don't miss out. And while you're at it, please leave us a 5-star rating and review to show some love, but also to help future listeners more easily find the podcast so they can experience the value and goodness as well. We've compiled all resources mentioned on the podcast, as well as other resources that are extremely valuable and effective at helping you grow your marketing automation skills quickly, and you can access them all at allsystemsgopodcast.com. Thanks again for listening, and until next time, I see you online. Automate responsibly, my friends.